We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Fill her up!
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the fuck up.
You're listening to Believe You Me with Michael the Count Bisbing.
You know my name yet?
And Anthony Lionheart Smith.
Well, now, but I don't think we've talked about it.
Oh, Laura's building a house.
Building a house. Just...
Oh, God. You know what you remind me of?
What?
Carmela Soprano. I'm watching Sopranos right now. She's at the base. She's building a house, the spec house.
The spec house.
How big is the house going to be, Laura?
We're not on, are we?
We're on. We're rolling. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thank you to Laura Sanko, as always, saving the day.
I mean, I'm just here to do what I can, Michael. Just here to do what I can and chip in.
Yeah, well, I'm sure all the believers appreciate not staring at Harrington's bald head, Anthony's bald head, and your covered up head. What is that?
I mean, I can take, I cover up my forehead because I don't feel like it plays well on podcasts.
Oh, no, it's good. You got a great forehead.
But I have a lot of hair and a lot of forehead.
Well, there you go. There you go. How you been? You well?
Yeah, I've been good. I'm trying to think. I was in Mexico City, so did the desk down there. That was a little crazy.
I saw you doing a little dance-off with Michael Chiesa.
We were literally talking about you. Funny you should bring that up. Weren't dancing. We were attempting to be DJs because there was some fantastic Mexican house music thumping behind us. And they kept, you know, making like five more minutes, guys. So we're just kind of standing there around and, you know, just you start scrapping. Yeah. He was singing your praises. Not that he needed to me. I already knew about DJ Mikey B and his amazing talents with actual vinyl records, not this like flip a bunch of switches shit.
No, lots of vinyl records. But I was attempting to be a DJ as well for many years. Attempting is the key word, you know what I mean? Well, thank you for your time, Laura. As always, Harrington has done a great job with the notes. We've got a few things to talk about. Mexico City, how was that in general? Do you like Mexico City?
I did. I mean, what I like about it is it's got the vibe of New York, a huge city, obviously. I think it's one of the biggest cities in the world. But they have trees in the city, which is kind of fun. New York doesn't have that. The vibrancy.
Central Park.
Yeah, well, other than just the park. But outside of that, you don't really get them. They're all over Mexico City. The vibrancy of the people and the food and everything is fun. But the fans are fucking insane.
They are insane. Well, yeah. I mean, we saw the big fight in the crowd. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, but that was just one of like seven.
Was it really?
Yeah, there was a girl fight about 30 feet from us. And then the guy got involved and like kicked this chick right in the chest.
Oh.
But I don't think she minded too much. She was still, it didn't hurt her.
I've got a feeling everywhere. In Mexico City, that's not as big as a deal. You know, could you imagine if a guy kicked a girl in the chest out here in the Western world?
Yeah.
That'd be all over the news. Mexico, just another day.
Yeah, you got the sense from the arena security that they were like,
John that does the editing on my YouTube channel, because remember there was a lot of talk and that apparently the security didn't break up this fight. My mate John is like, maybe they were cartel members. I'm like, maybe you've been watching too much Breaking Bad. Well, who knows? Maybe they were cartel members. Herringbone, welcome to the show, sir. On Monday, he had no audio. Oh, look at him coming. Are you streaming from the Batcave?
We made an aesthetic decision.
What does that say on your shirt? Mistakes?
Mistakes were made. It's kind of the story of my life.
Oh.
Mistakes were made. And
I love the use of the passive voice, not owning the mistakes, just that mistakes were made.
Yeah. Mistakes
were made. By someone.
Mistakes, will still be made. Harrington, in your opinion, your expert opinion, of course, what is the biggest story in mixed martial arts that we just have to hear a take from Laura Sanko on? And I mean, I'm sorry, Laura, that sounded like I'm talking shit. It's just me being silly. Go ahead, please.
I feel like if I had an expert opinion, it would just be parodying you. But I think the biggest news story I've seen, at least, just based on people talking about it on Twitter, Instagram, et cetera, Nate Diaz having a row with DC. Nate Diaz came out and said he wants to be on the Noche UFC card, which is going to be, I believe, UFC 306 at the Sphere. He said, yeah, he'd like to take part in it. Daniel Cormier said he wouldn't mind seeing Nate on the card, but it doesn't make sense to make him a main eventer. He said his best days have passed. I can pull the exact quote if you want it. Nate Diaz then went on Instagram, posted a video of DC with some pretty underhanded remarks towards the former champ.
Laura, I'll let you have the first take. Just go ahead. I was going to ask a question, but it's kind of a leading question.
No, it's fine. I love Nate, but Nate's not fighting at the Sphere. He's not even under QFC contract right now. Like, he's boxing Jorge Masvidal. And I mean, far be it from me to inject myself into what is and is not appropriate for Mexican Independence Day. But like, I feel like we need it wouldn't be Brandon Moreno at this point, but we need like an Alexa Grasso or a Yair Rodriguez, probably won't be him either, to top that card off. I don't know who you would pair up Nate with that would make sense for Mexican Independence Day. Yes, I understand that he is Mexican American, but you see my point.
Yes.
He's not coming back to the Sphere. He's just having fun. And DC is just, you know.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you just said he's boxing Jorge Masvidal. Is that actually going in? Because I saw Masvidal on Instagram. He was in Stockton. Is that because he's in the box, Nate Diaz? Is that happening?
Mean, that's like the thing that's bubbling up, but I haven't seen any announcements. But that to me is way more likely than seeing him pop up on a UFC card at the Sphere. I mean, I think you'll see Nate in another organization or in boxing. I'm not saying he can't come back to the UFC, but like, I just don't see who you would put him up against to headline a card on that day in that location. It feels like it has to be very Mexican heavy for it to make sense.
It's Mexican Independence Day, being a Mexican heavy card. That would seem to make sense. I'm just looking up Nate Diaz, 38 years old. Okay. As we know, not under contract with the UFC, to your point. That'd be, you know, issue number one. Issue number two, didn't have a good fight against Jake Paul.
No.
Let's be honest, right? And I'm not ripping on Nate Diaz. The man's a warrior, legendary career, fan favorite, cult-like figure in mixed martial arts, okay? Beat Tony Ferguson in his last one, lost three out of his last four before that. Still a big draw, though.
I would have been like really excited if they had start to say, you know, like, oh, Nate versus Connor for UFC 300. I get it. It's not even a relevant fight, but it's a fun fight and it's an interesting fight. And it's a fight between two absolutely massive names. I just don't know who you would put Nate against at the Sphere for Mexican Independence Day, where that would all, like all the stars would align and that would begin to make sense. I think he's off doing other things.
I kind of echo the sentiments of DC with respect to Nate Diaz and the career that he had. I think probably his best days are maybe behind him. He's not a part of the UFC anymore. It's been how long? It's been 2 years since he fought in the UFC. Of course, there's always the Conor McGregor fight. And of course, Nate's going to talk shit. So he shows the picture of DC getting head kicked by John Jones. I think that's what Harrington said. If I was DC, go on, Harrington. Don't tease us.
It was the interview after where he was very emotional in the cage.
Oh, I see. Well, that's better. But if it was the head kick, if I was DC, I would post Josh Thompson knocking him out with a head kick.
Yes.
But it wasn't a head kick.
You can start your own beef right now if you want to, Michael. Do it.
I've got enough beef. I've got enough people coming after me. They think it's okay to go for DC, you know, because DC's a big, fluffy, cuddly teddy bear. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Cruz will go after him. People go after him. Nate Diaz will go after him. They forget the absolutely terrifying figure that DC was inside the... Have you seen those pictures of him?
Yeah.
Just before the fight with Stipe and stuff? You do not want to fuck with DC.
No, and he, you know, he may have a different physique these days, but like the man can still fight. Think? Yeah, the man can still fight, and he's still one of the greatest to ever do it. So it's kind of hard to like... He's easy to talk shit to because he's not in the game. He's not on the roster anymore. You're not going to like run into him, of course, inside the octagon. So I think guys like to pick on him, and they know in general that he's not going to get too ruffled and like, you know, go find you in your sleep or something like some of these other crazy fighters might. Yeah. But yeah, you got to take him seriously. DC's still very much a badass. Like there's no denying that.
But you know what it is? And again, we're not here to just kiss DC's ass, but it's true. The reason, kiss away. The reason is because DC is so comfortable in himself.
Yeah.
And he knows he hasn't got to prove himself and lose his temper.
He can be self-deprecating.
When he knows in his mind, I could literally pick you up and slam you through a wall. So he's not going to lower himself. So anyway, shout out DC. UFC Noche. There seems to be a lot of focus on Mexican MMA lately.
Bro, the talent, the depth of talent, obviously it's hard to explain, especially with Contender Series, you know. Mm-hmm. We'll see guys pop up here and there, but it's not until you put them all together on a card like was in Mexico City, and then you see the fighters that weren't even on the card that were doing the Q&A, like Lupe Godinez and Tracy Cortez and Lopez. Like the depth of Mexican talent right now is insane, and it's really cool to see, because not that long ago it just wasn't that way. Years ago it was just sort of like Cain Velasquez carrying almost in a way not even Mexican-American heritage but Mexican heritage along with him, because there was just not that much representation inside the UFC. So got like guys like Manuel Torres, who's like, golly, that guy's got
golly,
I'm so blessed. Oh shucks.
Oh man, these guys are really great. Mexican Performance Institute as well.
What?
A Mexican Performance Institute. We're gonna see more of these people. Yeah. You know, we got the Shanghai Performance Institute. Is there any others that you're hearing that are opening?
I'm trying to remember. Didn't they talk about one in Puerto Rico for a while?
Why aren't we getting a British Performance Institute? That's what I want
to
know.
Yeah, I feel like that should happen. I don't even, to be honest with you, I've not even really heard of Puerto Rico's having a huge MMA scene. Someone correct me if I'm crazy, but yeah, the UK would make sense way before that. I think though that they feel like the training situation is developed enough in the UK that
we're being punished because we've done so much with so little.
Yeah.
We don't need a little assistance. We don't need a little leg up, a little nudge, a push in the right direction, cultivate the scene just because we've got champions galore.
Don't argue with me. I would love to have a PI in the UK.
Harrington always puts a bunch of stuff in the notes. Harrington, give us one here. I don't know which one to start with. In fact, we're going to start with number two, the Willy Wonka thing. Did you see this, Laura?
I did.
So I just did a show for TNT Sports, so I've been busy all morning. So I've only just glanced at these things. And so Harrington put this in, but Harrington said the same, please. This is, so as if this wasn't already bleak enough, what we're going to see, it was in Glasgow. Okay, yeah. So like, just however bleak this could be, times it by 10 in your mind. Shout out to the Glasgow people, of course.
So there was a experience that was marketed using artificial intelligence, right? So they had like AI art generated to show what Willy Wonka's Wonderland could look like, with modern technology in 2024 as a live experience. This is what was actually delivered. People who went showed a lot of crying children, very upset parents. People were charging. I saw reports that were either $35 or $45 a ticket for this warehouse walkthrough.
Is that a video, Brian? Let's have a look.
Scary face.
Oh my God.
Scare
of the great. Oh my God.
Wonderful. Why is Ronnie James Dio in Alice in Wonderland?
What is that?
That's right, kid. That is the question.
It is a warehouse.
What even is
that? I'm not joking.
I've seen better birthday parties down the street.
Look at it. It's empty.
It's the best in the world. And I bet we have to pay for that food over there.
Oh my God. It's like Firefest.
These are like
Firefest.
You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
What a waste of money.
All right, we get the idea, Brian. I mean, look, that is just bloody depressing. I mean, you get the kids all hyped up. You look at it, the AI-generated image, and then you go and get that. As a mother, as a loving mother, as an incredible mother, the strong, independent female that you are, what would be the response of Laura Sanko when you got there?
I would go full. I mean, in that situation, I would go full Karen, if you want to call it that. I would be asking for every single manager. I would be taking down everybody's name. And then I would figure out who owned the company, even if it was an LLC, a shell LLC. I would figure out who owned the shell. And I would find a way to make it right, because I'm like a dog on a bone like that. If my child gets excited about something, if you sell my son a bill of goods, you're going to make good on that sale.
Oh, and I believe it. You just, let's peel back the curtain there, because you're speaking like a woman that knows a little bit or two about finance, Laura. Tell the people what you used to do, what the old version of Laura Sanko was before you.
You're looking at the old version right now, the younger version.
The younger version. You know what I'm saying.
Version. I used to be in venture capital startup, so like early stage stuff. Nothing huge. But yeah, finance was my original career. So that was back when MMA was like my dangerous hobby. Then that was my real life job. And then they kind of switched places. So
is there anything that this woman can't do? My God.
I just don't ever talk about it.
No. Good. Yeah,
there's lots I can't do. Have you seen me try to play a real sport? It's awful.
What's your best sport? Other than MMA or whatever, what is your best sport?
There isn't one. Climbing. Like I'm really good at climbing, but that's not a real sport. I'm saying football, basketball, baseball. It's every, you know, girly stereotype you could ever imagine. I'm terrible.
Anything with a ball.
DC said it on air.
That was not a leading statement.
No,
but it's true that I'm the same. Ball games. I suck.
I'm awful.
I suck. And I feel bad as a father because Callum, and I shouldn't even say this, he can't throw a ball, right?
But it's your fault.
Yeah, well, it is, because I'm so shit at them. So I should have been out there, you know, like throwing the ball and all the rest of it. But I don't do that. Do you know what I mean? So he wasn't doing that.
I can throw a football and catch a football. Okay. Like if I had to pick anything from mainstream sports that I wouldn't look ridiculous doing, it would be throwing a football. But it can't be a normal NFL size ball, because I have little midget hands, and I can only get my hand around like the little, I'm not going to say the tip. I just said it. I know.
What are you doing? Callum pushes. He pushes I'm like, dude, you got to give it a bit of whip. Yeah. You got to give it, you know what I mean?
And
he throws it. Love you, Cal. You're very good at wrestling. You know what I mean? You found your thing, that's for sure. All right. So the Willy Wonka thing was shit. What's the best thing you've done with your kids? Like outside, like go into something, an event or anything like that? What's one thing that stands out in your mind?
Honestly, the Tower of London. I mean, probably not a big deal for you because it's right, too far, but it was incredible. I mean, really all of London was amazing, but as an American, you know, we get excited about stuff that's from the 1800s. To be walking around and having the guy be like, this wall is from 4. This building is from 2. You know, it was crazy.
Hey, Mike, is the Tower of London kind of like the Empire State Building? Like, I live in New York. I went to the Empire State Building once when I was a kid because my, like, tourist cousins came in. But it's not like a activity that New Yorkers do, is go to, like, the deck, you know?
Yeah. So every time we are in London, we have to go to the Tower of London because Rebecca is absolutely obsessed with it. It's her favorite place in the bloody world. She wants to. We've had the tour, I don't know how many times, right? We were there last summer. It was boiling hot. They got the beef eaters. The beef eaters are like the prison guards that were like the highest of the high. They call them the beef eaters because they actually got to eat beef.
Yep.
You know, and I'm standing there baking in the bloody sun, listening to the same shit, half a hangover. I'm like, for crying out loud, I'll be in the gift shop getting a coffee. She's like, do you not want to do the tour? I'm like, babe, we've done it 7 times.
It doesn't
okay So,
but I am convinced, and I don't know if you looked through the comments on the last time we did the show, I am convinced that your wife and I would be very good friends if we ever got to hang out. And someone was like, they should start a podcast. And I thought, you know what? Maybe we should.
Oh my just God. Oh my God. Rebecca!
Rebecca!
You guys would be great friends, except she doesn't have friends.
I don't either.
Oh God.
There's a reason why.
She has no friends. But she doesn't want them. You know what I mean? She has like a couple of friends that she went to school with that she keeps in touch with in Australia. But yeah.
I have two best friends and that's it.
She is exactly the same way. All right, today's episode is sponsored by Prize Picks, which is the largest independently owned daily fantasy sports platform in North America. And they are the easiest and most exciting way to play DFS. It's just you against the numbers instead of going up against thousands of other players, including pros and sharks. You just pick more or less. Like, for example, this weekend in the basketball, you just pick, will certain players get more or less points? It's that easy. And you can 25x your money. You can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. There is quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types. That is what makes Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app available. So this weekend, basketball games on deck. Steph Curry's back in action. Will he get over or under 5 assists? Damian Lillard, will he get over or under 23.5 points? And Brandon Miller, will he get over or under 3.5 three-pointers? As I say, it could not be any easier. Prize Picks also offers Apple Pay for quick and easy deposits into your account. This football, basketball season, whatever it is that you want to bet on, you're going to get paid out quick. You can deposit quick. You do it with Apple Pay, all that good stuff. So take advantage of this offer that we have by going to prizepicks.com/believe, use the code believe, and you will get a deposit match of up to $100. Use the code believe for a first deposit match of up to $100. Right, Israel Adesanya says that Dricus du Plessis is essentially ducking him. The headline here, Israel Adesanya says that he was offered the UFC 300 main event, but Dricus turned down fighting on that day. He also says that once he takes care of DDP, that Sean Strickland will be next.
Well, I'm glad to see that he's, you know, injecting himself back in the conversation. That always makes for better times at middleweight division. But Drake has just fought in late January. Like, give the guy a break. You know, I'm not expecting him to be back this soon anyway. I think that's a little bit much to ask. I think he made a pretty relatively quick turnaround to fight Sean in the first place. So I think it's to say he's ducking, I think is a bit much. He probably is dealing with some injuries or just wants to rest or just wants to prepare for you properly. I don't really.
I think Dricus said it perfectly himself. When you're trying to become the champion, when you're working your way up, you got to do this. You got to take risks. You got to take short notice fights. You got to step up that maybe when your body's not optimal. But when you become the champion, you are afforded the luxury of saying, nah, I'm not ready. I'll still fight relatively soon, but I need another month, 6 weeks, 2 months, whatever it is. So I have no problem with him there saying that. Sean Strickland is next for Israel Adesanya. Would you see that fight going any different than the first one?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the way that Izzy is able to game plan, he might be able to figure out some ways to work around the volume of. I mean, the biggest thing is that he just put Izzy on the back foot the entire time, and Izzy can't allow him to do that. If he were to fight in a different style, I think he's the better technician. But I will say that I said this going into that fight, Sean will always be a tough fight for Izzy's natural style. Izzy's going to have to fight a little bit differently than what I think his favorite way to fight would be in order to have the best type of fight against Sean. He's going to have to make some adjustments, obviously. But do I think he's capable of doing that? Yeah, I do. I think it'd be a tough fight for Sean the second time.
Brian loves Sean Strickland. Okay.
Everybody does. I love him too.
Defends.
I think he's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you been keeping up with his Twitter feed lately?
Me?
Not all of us. I have.
Oh my God.
I'm gonna pull it up right now.
I mean, though, every day, there's just wild, wild shit because he's, you know, when you act a certain way and then people and enjoy it and you get praised,
yeah,
it reinforces that behavior. So it seems like every tweet is getting just more and more, yeah, down a certain pathway. Do you know what I mean? Brian, bring up his Twitter feed if you can. I can't think of any of them off the top of my head. We had the thing with the Navy SEALs.
Yeah,
which we talked about on Monday show. Oh, fat people. Here's why I don't trust fat people. Fat people are hard to look at. You're sweaty all the time. You all struggle to do anything in life. It is funny, especially eating. You betray your arteries daily for sugar. You will betray me for less. He's got some points.
Yeah, I mean, I had this conversation with someone in a comment section not that long ago, because what's weird about Sean is, like, he'll say some, just a topic that applies to me, he'll say some wild shit about women, right? And then at the same time, he will be one of the first to praise my commentary or me having a shot at that role. So that's, those two things seem in contrast to each other, right? And my point to this woman who was like, I don't know how you can like him, he's so awful about when he talks about women. And I was like, yeah, listen, I get it. And you're not wrong. If I was in your position, I'd probably feel the same way too. But having met him and spent at least a little bit of time around him, here's the thing I'll tell you about Sean. When he says women should stay in the kitchen, that's where they belong, that's where we went wrong, is when we let women voting and let them out of the kitchen, whatever. What he means is, I think nuclear families are important. And I think that, traditional family values lead to a better society. It just, you don't get attention when you say things that way.
You should be a defense attorney as well as a finance expert, a lead commentator for the UFC. I mean, because that was quite the spin. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So my client said, all women belong in it. What he meant was that nuclear families are important. And having the woman there nurturing the household, mm-hmm, making it a home, cooking, mm-hmm, lovely meals, and encouraging the husband after a hard day's work, running him a bath and,
yeah,
giving him a little foot massage. That's what he meant. Yeah. I think Sean's just having fun with it all, to be honest. You know what I mean? And he's doing the right thing because he's polarizing as hell. And that is what you want, right? We've talked about this a lot. When you walk out there, you don't want a polite clap. You want half of the arena, yeah, let's go Strickland. And you want the other half saying, God, I hope this motherfucker gets knocked out.
I think he might be the most popular fighter on the UFC roster. And I think he's close.
Big statement.
I know. I think he's, you're going to think I'm crazy. I think he's probably getting close to, in the realm of Conor.
Don't say it.
I said it. He's not going to be making that type of money anytime soon. And I don't know that as it will last, because I don't know how long he can put on spectacular performances that back up everything he says on the microphone, but it kind of doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. He figured out a need in the fan base and met that need and meets it every single day. And it's a part of the fan base I don't think was getting fed before. And they're like, now they can't get enough. He is crazy to me how popular he is.
Well, and part of that is because what he's doing, it's because everybody's sick of this political agenda, yeah, which is being forced fed down everybody's throat. Okay. About, you know what I'm talking about,
yeah,
you know, and
he says it.
And he says it, and people,
yeah,
appreciate that,
yeah,
you know,
and we all live
there's
by
bigger
curious,
things
sure
to worry about than people's bloody pronouns and stuff like that. There's real issues in the world, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And these issues need to be focused on. People getting upset because they use the wrong pronouns or whatever it is. It's like, really, really, is that the biggest thing you've got going on in your life?
Yeah.
When you see these videos on Twitter, someone losing their mind and screaming, I can't believe he called me a she when I am clearly a he, or whichever way around it was. It's like, listen, all right, whatever. Okay, I get that. And I sympathize with you. Maybe I don't really, but you know, for the sake of argument, I'll say that I do. But is it really worth going to Twitter and making a video or going online or on TikTok? Is that the biggest issue you have? There's people dying on here. Just this morning, there was a terrible event that happened in Gaza overnight. I turned the news on it. It's just bloody awful, right? There's shit happening all over the world. And you're getting misjudged. Anyway, what I'm saying is people are kind of fed up with this messaging. Yeah. And I think he's really tapping into that fan base. But on something you said there, Brian and Hamilton, have a think about this. If we get stuck, let's go through the five most popular fighters. This was not in the notes. This is on the fly. So you're saying Strickland's right up there. Hamzat Chimaev?
Yeah, although I would say he's maybe waned a little bit, but I would say he's up there. I think Izzy's still up there, although he waned a little bit. I think Sean O'Malley's up there.
Yeah, O'Malley for sure, a good one.
Yeah, so yeah,
I think Sean Strickland is kind of what was responsible for some of the decline in Izzy. And I'm not talking about the fight. I'm talking about the way he turned all the fan base against him. And I think that had a big reason for why he beat Izzy in the first place. You know, he brought up all the dog stuff and all the rest of it. Took a lot of it out of context, whatever. And then all the MMA dickheads went and found all this other stuff online and it formed this narrative. And I think it kind of messed with his head. But yeah, O'Malley, Hamza, Strickland, McGregor's obviously up there.
Yeah, McGregor's obviously still number one.
Yeah, by far.
Yeah. But how many is that?
Pereira?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. Thank you for bringing that one up. That's another one that, to me, you know, we used to have this narrative that, like, unless fighters spoke English, they were never really going to be needle movers. And that just is not the case anymore. Social media has allowed people to generate fan bases outside of their natural language in a way that just wasn't possible. You know,
I prefer natural.
Natural.
Yes, it's my natural language.
My natural, accent.
Yes. Let me ask you this, though. We say all this and we don't mention John Jones.
That's a good point.
It's an interesting isn't it? Because he is, right, the consensus GOAT, if we will, without starting that whole bloody conversation. You know what I'm saying? He's up there. He's one of
them. No, I'm of the belief, yes.
Yeah. Is he one of the most popular fighters, though? Because he should be on paper in Harrington and Brian. You're welcome to give an opinion. Go ahead, Laura.
Well, I was going to say he is, but there's such a, this word is so annoying, but relevancy, you know, are you of the moment? And the moment is now. And because he hasn't fought in forever and the shoulder and, you know, we didn't really see much last time. He's not someone who's going to go out there and just grab a hold of the zeitgeist in the way that Sean does or O'Malley does. But yes, of course, he's still on that list.
Mm.
I think a lot of the hype around John Jones fighting these days is this the day that he loses. Mm. So I think a lot of people are waiting on John Jones's downfall.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting take, Brian, because it has to happen at some point, right? And I think, though, that the fact that he doesn't fight as frequently is still part of the allure. I mean, obviously, he had 3 years away. Now he tore his pec. Not his fault. Injuries happen, you know. I would be very interested to know the pay-per-view numbers. I think he's more of a draw than what people think. It's John Bloody Jones, man.
Yeah.
You can't miss a John Jones fight, especially now as he's getting towards the end of his career. I say the end of his career. He can fight for another 5 years. Who knows? But you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. No, I wish we had a better sense of it. Of course, I think that when John gets booked, that pay-per-view is going to be massive. It's going to be absolutely massive. I think what I'm talking about, like when you started this conversation, it's just funny that my mind immediately goes to like who is the most popular this instant, you know?
Mm. No, absolutely. Because I forgot about John Jones as well. We were saying Hamzat, we're saying this guy, that guy, and the other guy, and then I was like, oh my god, we got John Jones. We can't forget the career and what he's done. Herringbone.
So I have a list here of the top five active fighters, not Conor McGregor, just by Instagram following, which is, you know, it's not the best metric, but. Right. It does show a certain level of popularity. Israel Adesanya, number one. John Jones, number two. Islam Makhachev, number three. Hamza Chimaev, number four. And Charles Oliveira, number five.
We were way off.
All that being said about John Jones, apparently, John Jones' return resulted in the highest grossing commercial pay-per-view for the UFC in the year. So 285 was their biggest pay-per-view.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. And Harrington, you look like you're coming at us from the set of Alien.
Yes.
No, I was going for the Batcave because you said Batcave.
I like it. It's good. It's good. So Charles Oliveira, I can't believe he didn't say that.
Yeah.
So is he, in terms of Instagram following, obviously without McGregor, because I'm sure he's 10 times everybody. So is he? Just give me that list again, Harrington.
So the full list is Conor, Khabib, Ronda, then Izzy, as far as active fighters, number one, John Jones, Islam, Hamzat, and Charles Oliveira.
Yeah.
I wonder if those very passionate fan bases translate one for one to pay-per-view buys, though. We always talk about the Kazakh fan base being insane, and they are absolutely nuts. But I wonder if, you know, are all 150,000 people that commented on my one photo each buying a pay-per-view? That's what I'm curious about. I don't know.
Are they each buying a Laura Sanko Believe You Me podcast hoodie? That's the real question I want to know. Let's go.
Brandon Moreno being the first Mexican champion, right?
Yeah, see, that's interesting because, of course, popularity will be very high, but I hesitate before I say this because it sounds disrespectful, but I think, am I right in saying this? As you get to the really lower weight classes, for some reason, it affects a little bit of the popularity?
I think so. I have a theory about this.
Please go ahead.
I think that at the end of the day, the more average fan, the fan that's buying only pay-per-views and not necessarily watching, you know, fight nights like this weekend, there's a part of what drives you to the sport where you want to look at the guys fighting as superheroes. You don't want to feel like you could go out there and do the same thing, right? When I watch an NBA player dunk, I know that there's no fucking way I could ever do what they're doing.
Yeah.
Same thing with a lot of, but something about fighting, there's always that part of like, well, I could do that. And I think what happens at the lower weight classes, there's a part of the brain that's like, oh, I could still take that guy. He only weighs 125 pounds. Like, so I think that's why heavyweights will always have this allure to them because they've got that superhero mystique. But that's just my.
No. I think you're pretty much on the money because people do. They want to put them on a pedestal. They want to look at them as doing things that they could never dream of doing. Of course, most people couldn't dream of doing what Brandon Moreno or Roy Valentino. They could not dream
you're
of that.
Wrong. Okay. Yeah.
You can't do that for 25 minutes at that level, at that technical ability. Never, as they're sitting on the couch with a big bag of Ruffles and a can of beer and then 400 pounds. You ain't going to do that, bro. But you're right. For the average human being, seeing this big, massive dude glistening in muscles, flying through the air, doing head kicks. You know what I mean? That sells. That's sexy.
The glisten.
Like Mike Tyson. What?
I said the glisten sells every time.
The glisten.
The glisten.
Oh, God, there's some jokes there, but I'll leave it alone. Gilbert Burns has said that Bilal Muhammad isn't a big enough draw for a title fight before pointing out the three men ahead of Bilal in the running for a title. He said, I know the UFC has to put on the best fights, but I don't think, honestly, Bilal Muhammad deserves to fight for the belt, but honestly, I'm not intrigued. I know they wanted to make Hamzat, they wanted to do Shavkat, and they wanted to do Islam. The UFC wants to make the biggest fights, the craziest fights, the fights that are going to sell. Of course, Bilal responded, this bum has done nothing but cry since losing. I took the fight off the couch because I knew you suck and it would be easy.
And?
We're waiting for a response.
Well, what's funny about this is like, it was not that long ago. First of all, I don't agree with Gilbert. Gilbert sounds a little salty in this. I mean, if Bilal hasn't earned a shot at the title, I don't know who has. Is he as popular as Hamzat? No, he's probably not. But at some point, we have to operate on a meritocracy. Like maybe not all the time, but hopefully most of the time.
Correct.
And what's crazy to me is not that long ago, like this was the exact narrative about Leon Edwards. And now Leon Edwards is a badass who doesn't say no and who knocks people out and yada, yada, yada. But like literally 2 years ago, if we were having the same conversation, like, oh, he goes with decision a lot. Like he's not all that exciting. So I get so annoyed when we put these fighters in like a box and don't let them out of it. He's earned his shot, people.
You said that perfectly. You did, because you're absolutely right, because that was the exact narrative surrounding Leon. He needed that big one. Then he fought Nate Diaz, and he got wobbled in the fifth round, so that kind of damaged, took the shine off the victory. You know, the glisten wasn't there. You're right. You said that perfectly. However, I understand what Gilbert's saying.
Yeah.
For UFC 300, it wasn't going to be the one. It might happen at 302. 3 or 3, 3 or 4. It's probably going to happen. Bilal cannot be denied. Okay. And I just hope it happens soon.
I know.
For Bilal, for Leon, for my mental clarity, because I'm sick of bloody hearing about it. Fair play to Bilal Muhammad. He's campaigning. He's putting his case forward.
Yeah.
Right. Ad nauseum might be a saying that springs to mind.
You have to, though. I mean, if he was sitting back quietly, that's not going to get the job done. You have to become, you know, a little annoying about stuff sometimes. I speak from experience.
Oh, yeah. You do get annoying at times.
I know.
No, you're absolutely right. He does deserve it. And it's funny because we all, you know, and Bilal's one of the nicest guys you'll meet. He really is a class act. You know, I've never had a single issue. I've never seen him. I've never heard about a single issue. I've never heard about him being disrespectful to anybody. It's just kind of becoming a meme at this point, isn't it? You know what I mean? Which is really unfair, because he fights his ass off, took the undefeated record against Sean Brady, beat Gilbert Burns. Anybody else, it would be time. So time will tell. All right, today's episode is sponsored by Chalk. That is CHOQ.com. And they specialize in natural testosterone boosters. Okay, men's testosterone levels, they are at an all-time low. And if you're getting on, if you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, every year, your muscle mass is decreasing, your testosterone levels are dipping, and it's just a problem that's going to compound. It's going to get worse. You're going to lose muscle. You're going to gain fat. You're going to have less energy. You're not going to be as much as a man as you used to be. And that is why you're going to take the bull by the horns and give that testosterone a nice little boost. But you want to do it a natural way and in a healthy way. You want to do it with a product that is full of good ingredients, where those ingredients are listed to the exact clinical amounts. Okay. There's no label fluffing or underdosing. Chalk Daily is the cleanest research-based testosterone booster available on the market. And here's the really good news. It works. You will feel the difference, okay? Testosterone is a vital ingredient for a man. And if you're not getting the gains from the workouts, if you started to get out of shape, if the libido's dropping, you just haven't got the same pep in the step. The testosterone dropping, that's what's going on. Give it a boost. Do it the right way. Do it the cleanest way. And do it the natural way with Chalk Daily. And along with Chalk Daily, be sure to check out the Male Vitality Stack and the Stack Ultra. Right now, go to chalk.com, CHOQ.com. While you're there, use the code Bisping. You will get 35% off your entire order, okay? Continue this year with a bang, or get it going with a bang and give the missus a good bang. sorry about that bit. Go to chalk.com, CHOQ.com. The promo code is Bisping for 35% off your entire order. Are you aware of the Florida Man Games?
No, but I can only imagine what that entails.
What do you think it entails?
Florida Man Games. Drying your hair in a bathtub full of water.
It sounds like somebody in Florida would do. Harrington, I don't know much about this either. Come on. And this is Harrington's version of porn. He was looking up porn and he stumbled across the Florida Man Games. He's like, this is not at all, but this is awesome.
I usually start my search with man games. So that is correct. It's a prestigious award that they give out to the most Florida man possible. They have them compete in different types of events, such as like eating a whole bunch of bacon, drinking beers out of those, like, you know, the helmets that have the beer cans on top, and being handcuffed in the back of a car while trying to evade police. If you want to pull up, these are, you know, true athletes.
Serious question.
The title.
What the hell are we doing here? Three, two. 3, 2, 1, let's Florida.
Here we go, looking for headshots right away. Really takes
all right, man.
Oh,
seen that.
I got my ball. Okay, y'all. Wait, did he jump through the window? We didn't tell him to jump through the window. He's going through the truth.
I think we've seen enough of that. So basically, you're rewarded for being the best version of a criminal or the biggest degenerate possible. Whoever can be the biggest degenerate, escape custody from the police, commit crimes. Whoever's the best at that wins the cup.
Yeah, what do you win, I wonder?
Oh, freedom? Come on now. It's Florida. It's a WWE-style championship belt.
That makes sense. Have you ever seen the car jujitsu?
Oh, I think I have actually. Yeah, where they're fighting in the car with the seatbelts on.
That actually interests me. I'm not going to lie. That interests me.
I would like to see that. What is it, as an Englishman that moved to California 13 years ago, and I'm going to move away at some point. Florida gets a bad rap.
It does.
Right? People talk about Florida. Is it true? And I'm not asking you to condemn, and we'll throw it to the panel in a second, but the reputation around Florida, is it true to life, or is there good and bad in every part of society?
There's good and bad in every part of society, but there is a particular genre of
element.
White trash that exists in Florida. Now, I could also say that Michigan has its own special blend of white trash individuals. Oh, yeah. And I say that with affection. I have those people in my family. I'm not speaking ill of that group of individuals. But yeah, I think the warm climate lowers inhibition. That's my theory. You know, less clothing, longer daylight hours. You're not beholden to being in a house when it's, and there's alligators fucking everywhere. They're literally everywhere. Have you been to Florida and just, you know,
I went to Jacksonville, Florida for the fights that time in the pandemic. I went there. Where did I go? Not Miami. What's the other one? It's the other side. What?
Orlando? No.
Not Tampa. Orlando.
Jacksonville? No.
Tampa. I went to Tampa. Yeah, it was Tampa. Went to Tampa, man, and I didn't really think it was. I thought it was all right, man. Tampa. It's fucking all right, you know?
I don't know that anybody would be like, hold up Tampa as the shining example of, but Miami's pretty cool. Did you go to Miami?
I've never been to Miami. Never been there in my life.
Are you
going devastated. No.
Oh.
I never get to go to Miami. Chito Vera's fighting.
Yeah.
Perillo, my very good friend and coach, will be there. As you know, this is the main event, and this is a great segue into this. Because you'll be in there, you'll be there being a big shot, probably doing the weighing shows.
Oh, yeah,
you know what I mean? Speak to all the fighters, la-di-da-ing it up. You know, I'll be sitting here at home dealing with Harrington and Brian, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Beavering away on my little YouTube channel, but you'll be big wigging it up with Dana White and all the boys. Talk
I'm
to you about that
weighing show checks, trust me.
Oh, you're getting loaded of them. talk to me about this main event because. This is a big fight card.
It is a great fight card. Phenomenal. And I can't rattle it off top to bottom, but the main event is enough to sell me on it. It was a rematch that you kind of knew had to happen at some point because Sean initially was always like that. You know, I didn't lose. I got injured. Go back and watch it. And you can't really claim that you got a freak injury because you got injured from being kicked. And that was became a big part of the narrative that has always been attached to Sean since then is, yes, he's talented. Yes, he's an incredible knockout artist. His timing, his movement, his, you know, he's special. But is he durable enough to go against these guys that hit hard, that kick hard, and have these longer fights? So far, the answer has been yes. But I think a lot of people feel like Chito, you know, he did it once. Could he do it again?
Well, if he did it once, he can do it again, but it wouldn't be the same way, right?
Yeah.
How often do you see one of those leg kicks land, it hits the peroneal nerve? I think there's been a few instances, I think there was Cejudo when he fought, was it Demetrius? Did it happen there?
I think it was, yes. I think it was, who was that?
We had Jimmy Crute, was it?
With Anthony Smith.
With Anthony Smith. That was one there.
Chandler had some in Bellator, like when he fought, I'm forgetting his name.
We had obviously O'Malley and Cheeto. But what I'm saying is, you know, in all the thousands of fights that happen, it's not too often. It's like banging your funny bone. You know, it's you got to get it in that perfect spot. So it's not going to happen like that. But Cheeto does have the power. Mm-hmm. I think he has the power advantage. I think O'Malley's, I think he's faster.
Yeah.
You know, he's a beautiful boxer. But Cheeto has never been knocked out. And the chin that he has is unbelievable. And that's why, you know, he's known for getting off to the slow starts. And he does. He is a slow starter. And every time we've been on here and I've interviewed him, I feel like I'm being disrespectful because I talk about the slow start and I can see it annoys him a little bit. And I have so much respect for the man. It's not what I mean. Sometimes I don't choose the best words. But I know that it is something that they're working on. But he's never been knocked out. And I don't see O'Malley knocking him out. I really don't.
Did you guys ever, I know you're quite a ways apart in weight classes, obviously, but did you guys ever spar?
We did.
Well, I can do math. I mean, that is quite a 35 to 85 is quite
a jump. It's not 85. It's not 95. It's not 205. We can keep going.
What are you weighing these days? 220?
What am I weighing? Yeah, 218.
Yeah.
So like Monday, because I had a bad weekend, Monday was 220. Yesterday morning was 215.
See, if I could lose 5 pounds in my sleep, I'd be a happy lady.
That's what Rebecca says as well. Mm-hmm. So, well, that's not in my sleep. That's after my morning routine, which is 30 minutes on the Peloton. Then I do my weights. Then I do my stretch. Then I do 30 minutes in the sauna. And then I do the ice bath. Then I get on the scale. Then I get on the scale. What?
And I said, and a big old dump.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm not going to weigh myself. I haven't gone to the bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. They've been hard to come by lately. I digress. Constipation, man. It's killing me. I turned 45 yesterday.
Can I tell you something? I'm so mad at myself because I was laying in bed and I remembered it was your birthday and it would have been weird if I texted you that late at night. So I was like, oh, I'll just save it for when I'm on the show with him. And then today, I completely.
And I had to be that dickhead that brought it up himself.
No,
because anyone that goes on about their own birthday, they're dickheads. I'm sorry, Americans, with respect, they make too much of a big deal. Well, I shouldn't say Americans. A lot of women around Orange County.
So just they women. Have
maybe, and not all women, but there's people I see them on Instagram. They have birthday weeks now. It's my birthday week.
I'm like,
what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Birthday week.
Well, what are you doing for your birthday week?
Nothing. 45? You know what I did yesterday? I spoke to the fighters for 5 hours because we got fighter meetings. Then I went for a nice long walk with Rebecca. And then I got a couple of books.
Yeah.
Got a couple of books for my birthday. And you know what else she got me? As if I'm not getting, you know, just to tell you that you're getting old.
Yeah.
A robe. You know what I mean?
You're very sweet. I always picture you guys enjoying.
Are you there, Rebecca?
Your glass of red wine in your robe. Can I tell you
Come
something?
Come here. Funny? Yeah, no, I know. What else?
Like 5 days
ago. What? Well, she's putting her eyebrow down. Are they on or off? Oh my God. Come here. Come on. Well, now the people want to see. What the hell is this? I want to say hi to Laura quick.
Hi. Don't laugh. How are you? They're not bad, right? This is not the end product, just so you know. Oh,
I had no idea.
Did you just get them like tinted?
This. No, I'm in the. I do it at home, so I'm in the process of
You're
tinting.
Brave.
So, I do it all the time.
Really?
Because I like them dark, so I leave it on for literally like hours.
You could have said.
Yeah. I literally said I'm not camera ready. I've got eyebrow dye on.
Yeah.
This is the mark of a confident woman, okay? To come on your very popular podcast, mid-tint, men will not even understand the process we're talking about. And they're going to be like, oh my God, look at her eyebrows.
I was just saying you bought me a robe.
Yeah, a dressing gown, as we say in England. He doesn't like it. He doesn't like it.
Why not?
Because he's... I get nervous giving.
Oh my God.
One, he's so hard to buy for. But two, like, if he doesn't like it, no offense, like, he'll just kind of say, like,
yeah,
he'll
be like, my husband.
Yeah, and that's yes, that's what I do.
Yeah.
Well, don't. I'd rather you told me the truth, and then therefore next year I can make a better guess. I can do a better job.
But that's not being grateful, sorry.
No. I was very, very grateful, but I have a bath. What do they call it? I have a dressing gown, a robe, you guys call it.
Bathrobe.
I have one that I really like, and I've had it for a while.
Yeah.
And it's a nice design. I like it.
Do you like the thick kind, like a terrycloth?
It's like tartan, we call it. What do you guys? You guys said plaid. Yeah. I like the way it looks. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
But the thing I like it too.
That's my role.
Oh, so you want to use it?
No.
The thing is, he's so attached to it. Like he uses it all the time, but it's like because he hangs it like by the patio doors, so the sunlight has like faded it, and it's got like these weird marks in it. It's pretty gross. These strange stains on it.
Oh my God!
I'm joking. That is a joke.
Rebecca.
I'm joking.
Jesus Christ!
I've washed it.
The eyebrows.
I know I'm scaring everyone. But anyway, I got him a new robe. He doesn't like it. Oh. I got him.
You got me three books.
I got you three books.
What were the books? Aftershave.
Anthony Bourdain's book, like before he got super famous, and then one on short little chapters just on interesting like stories and facts, and then the other one was How to Live a Long, Healthy Life. It's called Outlive.
Those are some incredibly thoughtful gifts. And can I also give a shout out? Did you guys have a wedding anniversary recently?
No.
It's coming up soon-ish.
I don't know where. Did you post a wedding picture recently?
I don't know where that came from because obviously Bruce introduced us at our wedding and somehow that kind of resurfaced like last week. Maybe that's what you're talking about. I don't know why.
That's exactly what it was. So I just assumed someone posted it because it was here. Stunning.
Oh,
both of you. I was like, this
thank
is
you.
The most beautiful couple I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, stop. But thank you. Oh, he wants me to go. He's done.
But this is turning. Laura said,
why did you call me in here in the first place?
About the gifts. I didn't know you were going to come in like, looking like an extra from the bloody weird Willy Wonka place. You know what I mean?
The weird Willy Wonka.
You know that the Willy Wonka place we were talking about earlier? You go down well with those eyebrows. I was just wanting to ask about. I forget what it was.
The gifts.
I bought you a pair of shoes as well, but I'm returning them.
Have you not given them to me?
No.
Oh my God. I want them.
I know, but you won't want them. I changed my mind.
I want them. Go and get them right now.
No,
please.
You can only
for the
take
show.
So much rejection.
Hold on. For the show.
He's like,
no, please.
You won't like him. That's,
for the show.
I'm literally.
Go and get them. Bing. For the, right, the grand unveiling. She's, oh my. You're
I'm going to return.
No, bring them back. Bring them. Oh my gosh.
You better fucking like them, Michael.
What if I don't?
It doesn't matter at this point. You can't keep rejecting her efforts. Okay?
I'm not rejecting her bloody efforts. I don't reject any of her efforts. I'm very, very grateful for everything, but just the robe. I like it. I said, but I like my one. You know what I'm saying?
The one with the crunchy stains on it.
No, the one, it's nice. It was a very expensive one. I think that one was from Target. Okay. So this one was sent by a sponsor. I think they're like $500 to buy. It's good. It's nice. Okay. She bought one for like $17.99. Do you know what I mean?
I got you that.
I was from Saks. Okay.
But,
oh, nice. These are great. But hold on. Well, why wouldn't I like these?
Well, I love them. What did
I
you say?
Those are you, Mike. Those are exactly the kind of shoes I picture you want.
You change your mind and you send it. I know. I like them. Nice bit of Ralph Lauren.
Yeah.
They're very nice. Bet they're cool. Why didn't you like them? So for those people, because Brian will edit this up, as Rebecca handed them to me, I got cut off. It's like they were that bad. They were that bad. I ended the podcast. Oh, thank you, Doc. I like those. Thank they're you. Very nice. Yeah. I will wear them with pride. Now, thank you, Ma. Okay. You're
Bye,
a wonderful
Laura.
Woman.
She
says bye. Laura says bye. And shall we get back in? Shall we get this back on track? Rebecca? Sort the eyebrows out. Oh my God. Every bit of foundation or whatever it is that you
can
want.
I tell you my funny story real quick?
I know I'm joking, babe. I know you can hear me. That's the bit. Go on.
So like 5 nights ago, I'm laying in bed with my son, putting him to bed, and he's like, can you will you read me the Michael Bisping book, please?
Oh God, what a guy.
I'm genuine.
What a guy.
Because I was like, because he always wants to watch YouTube shorts because I don't let him watch shorts or TikTok. So occasionally he's like, can we watch them together? Because that way I can control what he's seeing. And I was like, we're not doing screens tonight. I just want to talk. He's like, okay, well then read the Michael Bisping book to me. So we read a few chapters.
When was this, last night?
It was like a few nights ago. Yeah.
Right.
It's hilarious. I'm not going to say he's obsessed, but he's like very intrigued by you and in your life. And it was when your manager had done some underhanded things and like you signed the contract without really knowing. Yep. And so we had this whole conversation about business. Like, it's a funny thing to think about. Like, you were foremost in our bedtime conversation without even knowing it. But yeah, that book is just a treasure trove.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is an authentic review by Laura Sanko. Quitters never win.
Yep.
I don't make any money off that, so don't buy it. Borrow it off somebody.
Why?
I don't know. I got paid up front, and then it's a long story. You know, these complicated contracts, the sons of guns. Anyway, Herringbone, save this show. Please get this back on track. That doesn't involve shoes. That doesn't involve caterpillars on eyebrows. What have we got?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm talking to a New York Times bestselling author, so I think that's a pretty cool thing that came out of that last little bit there. But so I had a number two in the notes. Henry Cejudo, he's walked back his retirement talk. So if you remember, he said that if he loses to Merab at UFC 298, that's it. He's hanging up the gloves. He said he can't go out like that. He has to make another stand, and he says that his ideal opponent would be Brandon Moreno. You remember they had the beef years ago. Moreno was training with him, and then he left to go train Demetrius for the Cejudo rematch. So they've had bad blood since then, which led to Davis Figueiredo joining Cejudo's camp. Now Cejudo says, one-on-one, let's finish this thing. It's a fight that makes sense for both of us.
I'm just still in shock that she didn't give me the shoes, that she thought I wouldn't like them. I feel, Rebecca, I love those shoes. Right. Go ahead.
I like this fight. I mean, I'm a little like over Henry retiring, not retiring, but I think he envisioned the fight with Merab in worst case scenario being an absolute war, and it just wasn't at all. He got picked up like a little child and, you know, thrown about. So I can understand why you wouldn't want to go, you know, retire on those terms. He's clearly still a very talented fighter. I love the Moreno fight, but can he make 125?
At 37 years old?
Yeah. Or do you think Moreno goes up to bantamweight just for the hell of it?
I don't. Listen, I like Henry. I was with him Fight Week. I was commentating. We did some interviews for the YouTube. I like Eric Albarracin, the captain, whatever, you know. So I want to choose my words really carefully. But he looked like his age had caught up with him in that fight. He's 37, you know. And listen, if he wants to come back and fight, great. Will I watch it 100%? And I think a lot of people will. Calling out Moreno, who's a weight class lower, even though he fought at 125 for a long time, I'm not sure if that was the call out. That, because what we like about Henry is that he's always gone for the toughest challenges.
Mm-hmm.
He came and beat Demetrius. Then he fought TJ. You know what I'm saying? He's always pushed himself. He's always challenging himself. Taking on Moreno, that's what, he's lost his last two now?
Yeah, you know, I think, is this him just recognizing, like, this isn't a title run. This is just a fight I want to have that in my mind, we're going to go toe-to-toe, punch for punch, takedown for takedown, and then
dick for dick,
and a win, lose, or draw, I can feel good about laying my gloves down. I just think he wants a war or a win, and that's it.
You know, when you put it like that, how can you have an issue with that? Yeah. And I guess for him, because he's proud of his Mexican heritage and Brandon Moreno being the guy that he is, then yeah, okay, that makes sense. I still think, as I say, he started to look 37, because 37, we talk about the number being 35
yeah.
in the lighter weight classes. He's 37. Hold on, when's his birthday? Because he might be pushing 38. February. No, she's just gone 37. So
but still, that fight against Marab was it wasn't a championship fight, but it was a championship caliber fight.
Without question.
And again, the statistic, held true for the fighter 35 and over. And I think that's even more pronounced the lower that you go in the weight classes. So
no, it is for sure, without question. I thought he looked good in round one. He almost knocked him out. Well, I said knocked him out. That's maybe a stretch, but he wobbled him big time. He was really good. It was really entertaining. And then the fight, Marab slowly just took over. And you got to think, because it's hard as you get into that age, to still go, I don't know how old Marab is, about 30, something like that, to go at this insane pace, it just gets harder as you're approaching 40. You just slow down a little bit. And look at that. We were saying before about the lighter weight classes, people thinking they could do that. The speed, right, that these guys fight at, the pace is just ridiculous. That really is the definition of a young man or woman's game. Do you know what I mean? It's just mentally exhausting, physically exhausting to just be fighting at that kind of crazy, blistering Tasmanian devil pace for that long. It's like, of course, you're going to slow down a little bit. I don't think going down to 125 is the answer. I say have some fun fights at 35 or 45.
Yeah.
I still want to see him fight again.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what happens a lot of times is you get to that age where you'll still have your moments in the gym against the same people you had moments against when you were at your peak, and your brain goes, oh, I still got it.
Yeah.
But I think what's really difficult for guys in that position is you just can't train at 90% for 8 weeks straight the way that you could before. So you might have the moments, but it's the duration that is really difficult to replicate, and therefore just doesn't find itself in the fight.
And it all comes back to, I think this is haunting him a little bit. And I don't know, because I haven't heard this from him, but he stepped away as a double champion for 3 years at the peak of his earning, at the peak of his ability.
Yeah.
A double weight champion. He could have cashed in big time there. And I think that probably haunts him. And I hope I'm wrong. I mean, the man's had an incredible career. Costa called out Hamzat for taking easier fights and not facing him. He needs to stop running. He needs to have the balls to face me. Yes, for a long time. That's not a Costa. Long time. This guy avoided this fight. He has no balls. It's not Costa. If the guys don't push him, he has no balls to fight me. He wants easy fights. He wants to fight guys. He wants to fight guys like me, Robert Whittaker, or somebody else like that. You just fought Robert Whittaker Costa and lost. He wants to fight guys with no wrestling, no jiu-jitsu game, no grappling, somebody like that. Why would Costa say that about Hamza?
Go
ahead.
He's saying he doesn't want to fight guys like him and Robert Whittaker.
Oh, sorry. Right. Yeah. Totally misread that. Thank God for Harrington. Where did you get that quote, Herringbone?
It was a Costa interview with Submission Radio.
Submission Radio. Laura, let me ask you on this one on Submission Radio real quick.
Love those guys, yeah.
Oh, great guys. Very good at what they do.
Yeah.
How many times did they text you asking for interviews? It's a lot.
It's a lot.
They're great guys. And I owe them an interview. I said I'd do it. I was like, bro, come on.
I hate saying no. I like to, help people when I can. And they finally quit. Because they used to have me come on after the pay-per-views, immediately after. So I'd get back to my hotel room at something, so like 2 o'clock in the morning. And then we'd start at 2:30 and go to 3. I mean, it was awful. And I was probably like, yeah. Guys, I'm sorry.
No, they're amazing. Because I said I'd do it. And you know, because I asked people to come on here, I've got to repay the favor. You know what I'm saying? So I said, I was meant to do Jay Glazer's yesterday, but I was in so much pain with my neck. One-on-one, Laura Sanko. There it is. What is that?
It's my podcast.
Yeah. I'll come on. Rip this. Put it on yours. We don't care. just Brian, send her the link. Stick it on. Anyway, all right. Hamzat Chimaev.
Yeah.
What is going on with this guy? Never mind what he said about what Costa said about him. What's going on with Hamzat? What do you know?
Well, I mean, I like this fight a lot, but in terms of what's going on with him, it always feels like a little bit of a mystery in terms of why he can't fight maybe certain places. Therefore, it feels like maybe he's ducking people, but isn't, but is, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I thought he looked really good against Kamaru, but I think people expected him to look somehow even better and, you know, get the early finish like we're used to seeing from him. I don't know. It's an interesting question. I'm not sure how to answer it.
Yeah, no, you didn't. You didn't. You skated around it like a pro. No. When did he last fight? Kamaru Usman. We don't know this. The rumor is online, and I don't know this for a fact, but they all say, and you see it frequently, apparently can't get a visa because of, you know, what's going on with Russia and Ukraine and Chechnya and all the rest of it. I don't know. I've seen that on Reddit. I've seen it on forums. I've seen it on people's Twitter. I don't know if that's the truth. But the inactivity is the only thing that's affecting Hamzat Chimaev. He's an incredible force of nature. He's a ridiculous wrestler. And I love the bad guy persona. But maybe we see him. Maybe we don't sometime soon because that's all he needs. He just needs to fight more frequently. Shamil Gaziev is the main event against Jairzinho Rozenstruik this weekend. Laura, you're not commentating. I am. I could wax lyrical all day.
Could you?
About Shamil Gaziev. He's making his UFC debut. Do you know much about this guy? Probably commented it on The Contender.
I did. I remember him from Contender Series. Yeah, he's a big Hulk of a Russian guy, and he can strike, he can grapple, he's incredibly durable, like a lot of the guys from that country are, undefeated. You know, not necessarily a lightning rod personality, but that doesn't necessarily matter.
I thought he was a funny guy.
He's kind of coming out of his shell a little bit on Twitter, I feel like.
So for those people that don't know, Shamil Gaziev this weekend is fighting Jairzinho Rozenstruik. And it's going to be a great fight because Rozenstruik always shows up and he loves to bang. That's kind of what he does. It's kind of like, you know, the grappling side of things, he struggles. Gaziev has got really good boxing as well. Knockout power, undefeated, 12-0. And we did the fighter meetings and it's kind of like this. And there's John Anik and all the rest of it. You know the setup. Explaining for the believers. By the way, I mentioned believers. I got a legit merch company, okay? Assigned with WME. They're going to handle it all. So this actually will happen. So if anybody has any designs that they want to put into effect, because that's what they said. They said, we'll get some designs. They said, why don't you ask your people to do our work for free? If anyone wants to send a design in and we will turn it into a real piece of art and it will be sold everywhere, far and wide. So please send it into bynpod@gmail.com. As we were doing the fighter meetings, the first thing, John Anik, he's got like pictures of people in the background. He's like, why you don't have my picture? Why no picture of me? Soon you'll have my picture. I like this guy. Yeah. Anik on blast straight away. Are you going to be watching the fights this weekend?
Always, yeah, I always do. I feel like I get anxiety if I don't. Now, I won't necessarily watch like every moment of every fight like I do a pay-per-view, but the main card, and even if I fall asleep, the first thing I do in the morning is go and rewatch it, because I feel like I just have a terrible case of FOMO if I don't at least watch the main event and co-main event and figure out what happened.
Yeah, there's a lot of UFC action, and I try and keep up with all of it. You know, sometimes if I'm out and about living my life, being a family man with Rebecca, sometimes I'll miss some of the prelims and whatnot, but I try and watch as much of it as possible, obviously for research purposes as well. Because of that, I don't watch too much other MMA. And people, you just can't. There's not enough hours in the day. I can't watch all UFC. I can't watch PFL. I can't watch ONE FC. I'm sure there's some amazing fights. You know what I mean? And if there's a big one that catches my interest that normally involves a former UFC fighter, then I'll watch that as well. But generally, there's only so many hours in the day. When you're not MMAing, when you're not building houses, when you're not being a mother and a wife to your fantastic husband, what else does Laura Sanko do?
Well, if I had more time, I would go back to showing horses, which I miss very much. which I know. I see the heavy eye roll of a man who has been sucked into the equestrian world.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to go down that path.
I know.
Would you? Oh, in fact, we will. Check this out. They're not going to watch this podcast, so it doesn't matter. So Rebecca got a horse, Mikey, a while ago.
Her horse is named Mikey?
She called it Mikey. She called it. That's not the real name. She called him Mikey.
How fantastic to just drop that in a conversation with your girlfriends. Like, I'm going to go ride Mikey, and then mic drop, and they don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
they don't know.
How amazing of a human being must I be
to
inspire her to call her horse after me?
Yeah.
You know. No, that's not what I was going to say. So we bought the horse, and she had a lot of fun riding it, but she fell off a couple of times, and she's hurt her back and stuff like that. And as she's, you know, but neither of us are getting any younger, so she's had to call it a day. But she's leased the horse out for a little while, and she got some good money. And now they want to buy the horse, right? They want to buy the horse, and we have an agreed price. And she's doubled the money from what we paid for it, yep. And she leased it already. But they've said, we had it looked over and we've had x-rays done and there's a problem with one. No. So we want to knock like 25% of the price off. So we said, okay, send the x-rays. They won't send the x-rays.
Interesting. Right? How old is he or she? He.
He's like, I don't know, I think like 13.
Oh, he's young then.
I forget. He might be a bit older, a bit younger. But now they're saying, right, they've got the x-rays, but they want like several hundred dollars to allow us to access them.
What?
And then Rebecca's trainer was like, hold on a minute. We know for a fact, because when we leased the horse, they had him looked over.
Yeah.
And he did have a thing before he was showing in the Olympics. I think he was used in the Olympics at some point. He's always had this issue. It's always been fine.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just trying to unload the horse community. They're trying to take us down.
Don't let them.
I won't.
God. Someone else will want him. You don't have to. That's prime age. And if he's a gentle ride and can do all the things I'm guessing he can do if he was at the Olympic level, then that horse is worth a good amount of money. I had a hard time selling mine. It was hard to let him go.
The bloody horse, because if they don't buy him, then we've got to pay for the bloody stables and all the rest of it. I'm not just take the flipping thing. All right, today's episode is sponsored by our old friend Sheath Underwear, the official underwear of the UFC and this podcast. Listen, Sheath used to sponsor us a while ago, and I am so glad that they are back. And I'm very happy because they sent me some new samples. And let me tell you right now, they are fantastic underwear, okay? They are the most comfortable underwear that I've ever worn. They look great. The designs are very, very stylish. They are high quality, and this is true. Even from all those years ago, I still have my original pairs. They've been washed, though. Don't worry about that. The Sheath underwear, of course, they specialize in that pouch where everything is kept cool and separated and friction-free, especially when you're training. And, of course, it keeps everything in the correct place. So believers, go to sheath.com and try Sheath underwear, the underwear of legends. Sheath underwear is made from high quality fabrics, and as I say, has a dual pouch, so everything keeps separated, or you can just wear them as regular briefs. I'm telling you, I've had these for a long time. I've got the new designs now as well. As always, super, super comfortable, very, very stylish. They've got a flattering fit as well, and they will last an absolute lifetime. By the way, Sheath.com has a ton of different products, including boxer briefs, base layers, and women's wear. So go to Sheath.com, the official underwear of the UFC and this podcast. And if you use the promo code BELIEVE20, you will get 20% off your order. I mean, think about this. Sheath have grown so much. They used to sponsor this podcast. Now they are the official underwear of the UFC. What does that tell you? Business is good. Why is business good? because they're a fantastic product. And I really, really do mean that. And you will mean that, and you will not be disappointed. So give them a try. Go to sheath.com. Use the promo code BELIEVE20 for 20% off. All right, Harrington, is there anything we need to get to before we get to questions? Because we are going off on tangents galore. And nobody wants to hear us talking about horses. And thinking,
They don't.
So just a warning to Brian, because this actually might end up getting cut if you guys don't want to talk it. But Fazeev says that the rumors of the UFC adding 165 and 175 pound divisions actually might be true. He says that the arguing over it in the back has already happened, and that they are going to move ahead with it shortly. He said that he himself likes fighting at 155 too much. He would stay there, but he does see a lot of fighters making that move.
All right. No, that's a good conversation point.
Yeah.
And I saw this the other day. Why is Rafael Fazeev, who's a great fighter and I'm a big fan of, how all of a sudden is he breaking this news?
Breaking news? I was saying the same thing.
Do you know what I mean? Well, who's Rafael? I love Rafael Fazeev. But
who's his manager?
How has he got the authority to be like, guys, I know.
What if they asked him if he wants to fight in the inaugural fight for the division?
I doubt they did, but here's what I think happened, because I think that interview was in Russian. So I think he probably thought that no one would ever
see it
or hear it or like translate it. So he was, I don't know, maybe he was just like loose-lipped because it was in another language.
Maybe. Look, listen, I think a 165-pound division would be
it.
Great. If yes. You got to have a 65, you got to have a 75, a 95 as well. Mm-hmm. You know,
oh, you like 95 as well.
That's the biggest weight cut of all of them. The biggest,
I know.
Jump from 185 to 205. That's 20 pounds. All these little 25, 35, 45. Right, what's that? Double it.
But
85
is there...
to 205. That's what I had to do. That's what I had to enjoy.
You get it.
Right?
Get
that's
it.
The sacrifice that I made.
Okay, as a percent, I get it. Okay, as a percent, 115 to 105 was quite a, I understand. I completely lost my train of thought because I just chided myself for like literally comparing myself to you.
Yeah. I was never at 115 to 105. No, the 25, 35, 45, 55, they're already at 10 pounds. Okay. Then it makes the jump to 70, 15 pounds. Then to 85, 15 pounds. Then for some reason, you just got
20
middleweights and light heavyweights. You guys are doing 20 pounds.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that if they do a 65, then they've got to make that the norm. 75, and who am I to say? Is one man on a podcast shooting the shit, talking out my ass. 85, 95, 205. That makes sense as well.
Is there enough depth between 85 and 205 to create a really robust, keep a robust middleweight, make a new one, and keep a robust 205 is the only question, because I think there's so, like, 155, I want to say, I remember looking at this one time, and I'm not going to get these numbers right, but like, in terms of the percent of the roster that's in 155 and 170, it's like absurd how much of the roster is just in those two weight classes.
I agree. But that's not my concern. My concern is still harnessed on when I was fucking fighting, I had to cut 20 pounds from 205 to 185. Yeah. And even though we're talking well over 10 years ago, okay, that still annoys me. So if they're doing a 65, they're doing a 95. No, but you do bring, all jokes aside, you bring up a good point. You do bring up a good point, because that is by far the most stacked division. Dana never wanted to do that, though. He was quite vocal. Granted, that was a couple of years ago now.
Yeah.
Change.
And I think if you bring out a new weight class, it has to be a really big fight, though. Like, and for some reason, I keep thinking this must be what Conor wants to come back at. Well,
this
because...
is what they're saying. I saw. It's not me. I'm not breaking news. There's an article about it. Let me just bring it up right here, because I got it sent to me from a YouTube guy.
Because you don't make a seismic shift like that without attaching something big to it.
Here it is. Conor McGregor could return to the UFC in a brand new division. This is TalkSport in the UK. TalkSport in the UK. This is not me. Notorious was the first dual weight champion. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah. Where is it? he could make history again. McGregor's eagerly anticipated return could return as the inaugural champion at 165 pounds. Rumours about a new weight division, lightweight and welterweight, which are separated by a whopping 15 pounds. Whopping 15, try 20. Lightweight fighter Rafael Fiziev claimed talk of an incoming 165-pound weight class is more than rumours after speaking with people who know the situation. He believes the division is coming soon. It's not a rumor, he said in an interview with, I'm hearing that it's already for sure as far as I know. Okay. Well.
Then he becomes a three-division champion.
Oh, God. And then that is it. That's the end of the world.
I'm totally speculating here. I have no backstage knowledge, but that makes sense to me is that, first of all, I think we know there's, yeah, he's never
wins in four weight classes.
He's never fighting at featherweight again. I can't really even see him fighting at lightweight, but I feel like 170 is a little fluffy. I mean, he could fight at 170 McGregor. Now. What's that?
For McGregor.
Yeah. But I could see him like cutting really hard down to 165.
Yeah, he ain't making 155 anytime soon.
No, but 65, I feel like he could make. And then you open up this whole new division, you get a title shot. Or a vacant title shot, and then maybe you win and you're a three-division champion.
Oh, God. It's set in stone, isn't it? It's just that easy. The first man to win in four different weight classes, three championship belts in three different weight classes.
The greatest ever.
The greatest ever, man. He is great, though, to be fair. I do want to see him back. I do. I desperately do. I know. And I say this all, poor old Chandler, poor old Iron Mike. Shall we do some questions, Lauren, let you get about your day?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. All right. If you have a question, please send it into bynpod@gmail.com.
And if you're listening on Spotify, where you find podcasts, make sure to subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating, positive review. It really helps out on those platforms. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to subscribe to the channel and you hit that notification bell to find out whenever a new video drops. And if you want to catch over 500 episodes you can't find anywhere else, completely ad-free and totally uncensored, head to gasdigital.com. Use the promo code BYM, get a 7-day free trial. Check out over 20 great shows on the network.
All right, first question we have here today is from Jake.
Yo, BYM, Jake here from Pennsylvania, chilling with my doggo Winston. Our question is, out of all the training camps you ever had, which one was your favorite and which one made you feel the best after, like the most prepared for your fight? Hell yeah. Thanks, guys.
Oh, God.
I'm going to let you go on this.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know which was my favorite. I know which one was my worst. By far, when I fought Dan Henderson at UFC 100, I was so overtrained. I had cuts and scabs and cuts all over my body. I had to run for about half an hour just in a circle on the mats to be able to get my body healing up. I had like mat burns all over my feet and everything. It was bloody awful. But best training camp, I don't know. What's one of the best experiences in your life, Laura?
In my life or in my fighting life?
In your fight career, then we'll go life.
For me, like, because so obviously I always feel ridiculous comparing anything I experience in fighting when I talk to someone.
Yeah,
like
but
you.
Don't.
But it was such a different, it was such a different time. Like I was fighting amateur 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012. And then my pro fight was 2013. And for women's MMA in particular, it was just such a weird time. So even my amateur fights were on Titan FC and they weren't televised because they were part of the portion that was just used as like the warm-up for the camera crew. But like, it felt like they were because I had a camera in my face and it always felt much bigger than just, well, I fought in a barn also, but that's a separate story.
We've all fought in a barn or two.
Yeah. No, for my amateur title fight, I had a really good camp and it was the first time I fought a girl that was taller than me, which I'm very tall for 105. I'm 5'5", which is pretty lengthy for Adam weight. And this girl was 5'7". And I was like, it was really freaking me out. It was a crazy fight. She actually popped my elbow out, but the ref didn't see it. And we fought on and I went on to win a very close decision and get the title and yay.
Congratulations. That, no, no, no. I was going to make a really bad joke a second ago. Nothing. I'll tell you off air. I'll tell you off air. But Brian comes on with a little cheesy grin. What was I going to say? So you were saying Titan FC.
Yeah.
All the amateur fights were on there as well, which mm-hmm. is great. It's a great platform for you. Do you know what it reminded me of? PFL last week. They were all amateur fights.
I didn't watch most of it.
I didn't watch the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I saw the prelims. There were a lot of amateur fights.
Yeah. That's exactly most of my... I had 7 amateur fights. I'm sorry. And they were all in a situation like that, which is, it's cool if you're the fan.
It's amazing. Oh, it's incredible because it gets you ready for those kind of big environments, that experience, the nerves and the pressure. But I was just, again, I'm not, you know. It's like,
but if it's being televised,
they're talking shit that they're going to take down the UFC and all the rest of it. So I was like, oh, watch this. Let's have a look at the product. I'm like, he's making his pro debut.
Yeah.
Just whatever. Anyway, love them. Brian.
The next question we have here is from Jordan.
Jordan, what's up?
It's being, I'm sorry. You know, last time I said, I hope you had a good birthday. I was thinking you guys are going to post the video afterwards, you know what I mean? But I hope you had a good birthday anyway. My question is, have you guys got any, like, favorite MMA-related meme pages? Because me personally, I follow this guy named Teep Muay Thai and he's funny. You know, Harrington, I love you.
Aww.
That's so sweet.
Harrington, I love you. Meme pages.
Do you follow
have any, Laura?
Oh, yeah. Do you follow, is it Strangles Bagman?
No, I don't follow any.
Oh, my gosh.
I really like
hold on.
I
got to look this
elbow.
Up right now. What's that, Brian?
Spinning elbow.
Let me
it's
look
like,
at that one
it's
now.
It's just like shit posting about MMA stuff. No, and occasionally they get me.
Yeah.
Spinning or spin in?
Spin in with an apostrophe at the
spinning.
End. Spinning elbow. Oh.
And what's yours, Laura?
Strangles_Bagman.
Okay. So I've got a follow back from spinning elbow. So maybe I'll give him.
346 minutes later.
How Francisco Prado looked after his fight with Daniel Zellhuber.
That
okay,
was a
that's
crazy
good.
Fight.
All right. This is good. I wanted the easiest in the division. I wanted Ryan Bader, probably. I don't know. I don't speak Portuguese. Oh, dear. All right. We'll give him a
it's
follow,
good.
Guys.
It's
there
good.
You go. How much did you get paid for that plug, Laura?
No, I'm not.
Yeah,
I hope,
you're full
you...
of shit. I'll find a way. Strangles_Bagman. I'll get it in there. I'll get it on. Brian, we've got one last question, hopefully.
We do have one more, and this is from Michael Janae, and he got a new camera.
Oh, nice. Oh, wow.
What up, BYM crew? It's your boy, Michael Janae. Mikey B, man, I appreciate you. Still sober, over 3 years. Got a question. What made you start your podcast in the first place, and what continues to motivate you to keep it going? Looking forward to those answers, but I do want to tell you, from a fan of watching the show, I suffer from severe depression, and oftentimes I feel very alone, and I want to tell you guys that your podcast helps me in those times when I feel so alone and I'm down and depressed, and it's really got me through the darkest times. So I hope that hits you where it's meant to, man. I appreciate you guys. Much love.
That's really cool.
Wow. Well, Michael, great to hear from you again, buddy. And thank you for the kind words. That is very, very kind. And I appreciate it. And, you know, you do similar stuff to us, Laura. You know, I never allow myself to think that because I hear things like that a lot, mm-hmm. you know, and people always have the nicest things to say. And for a lot of the time, it's just me and Anthony or me and the boys or whatever, and we're just having a bit of fun and whatnot. But to think that it affects people in such a way, that means the world to me. And I said this the other day. It's like if I'm walking through the street and someone's like, basically, get a picture or whatever, and that's all really nice. But if they say, we listen to the podcast, I'm like, oh shit, that hits me differently because it's like, yeah. Oh, so you sit there, you're actually interested in the personality or the backstory, and they were going, Rebecca and stuff like that, you know. So that hits me differently. Yeah. What inspired the podcast? Just trying to do things, expand your avenues. You know, you can't fight forever, so you start trying to think, what am I going to do with my life? Obviously, I had the eye issue as well, so I was trying to use my platform whilst I had one. What inspires me to keep going? One, I really enjoy it. Not going to lie, there's a business aspect to it as well, of course. You know, I've got a family to provide for, but that's not the sole reason. It's a reason for sure, but so sometimes, like now, Laura, right? Sometimes it can feel like work. You go, oh, I've got the bloody podcast, because you want to sit on your ass, or I want to do this, or I want to go there.
Yeah.
Right. And then you sit down, and then afterwards, you're like, Jesus Christ, that time flew by.
It flies by. Yeah. For sure.
And it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah. No, we have the best job in the world, including stuff like this. It's still wild to me. And I'll just take a moment right now. I've said this to you before, but I'd like to say it out loud. It is crazy to me that, like, I get to look over at times and I'm sitting next to Michael Bisping, who is like, and calling fights with Michael Bisping, because you have to understand that, like, not that long ago, I was in a bar watching you fight on television and, or watching you on Tough. And It's so trite to say it's a pinch myself moment. And like, I know I deserve to be there in the sense that, like, I feel like I add to the content, but there's still the other part of my brain that's like, this is fucking crazy. And so
the reason I'm nodding is not saying I agree with you, it's crazy, is that no, I've had the same experience myself. So sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, no, you're good. I look at stuff like this, and you're right. There's moments where it's like, man, this is kind of a chore. You know, here I am researching again, or, you know, whatever. But we're so blessed to be able to do this and to think that it impacts people beyond just like, you know, oh, that was great, whatever, is really cool. I was going through the comments on my YouTube page the other day because I'm doing like a comment reaction video or whatever. And there was someone who wrote, like, I've encouraged 3 women to start jujitsu just from showing someone this page. And like, that's wild to me. Never in a million years did I think that I would ever have any impact on people I'd never met. So it's an honor to be able to have a platform. And yeah, you do a tremendous job with it. And I appreciate you letting me piggyback sometimes.
No, not at all, Laura. You're a credit when we can get you on. Thank you very much. And Michael Genet, I just want to say well done, because he sent videos in before. Sorry to hear that you're still going through, you know, the depression and things like that. And it's funny because yesterday I was supposed to do Jay Glazer's podcast. He has a Unbreakable podcast that's centered around mental health. And I had a procedure on my neck last week. I had an ablation. I had a bunch of needles put in my neck and stuff like that. And they fry the nerves and all the rest of it. And it hasn't worked. And I've had like a reaction to it. So the last few days I've hardly slept. And I'm in absolute agony right now. I'm on all kinds of medication. So anyway, I had to cancel on Jay. Last minute, I said, Jay, I'm sorry, buddy. I said, yesterday I was white as a ghost. I had, it was a shit way to spend your birthday. Let me tell you that. I was white as a ghost. My head was on fire. I said, dude, I'm sorry. I can't do it. I can't. And he fully understood.
Yeah.
But the reason I bring that up is because I was going to go on a mental health podcast, and I was talking to my wife about it. And I'm like, cause I'm not that guy. Do you know what I mean? That talks about, I mean, listen, I do believe mental health should have a big focus on it, and people need to be more open with it and talk about it. But I'm generally, I haven't been that guy. I'm from the northwest of England. I'm from a small town. From my generation, we just kind of sucked it up and fucking got along with it. And if you talked about your feelings, you were a pussy and all your friends would make fun of you, you know. And I guess still a section of that, you know, well, still a lot of that remains with me. You know, I'm a typical guy, for want of a cliche term, that bottles everything up and says nothing, you know, and I let it build, and I should talk about things more. And I don't, I say nothing. I put a smile on it, a smile until it fucking explodes. And I either end up fucking acting like a maniac and saying a lot of shit I regret, or I end up crying my eyes out like an absolute little bitch. Do you know what I mean? So I was going to say to Rebecca, I said, well, what do I say? Jay's trying to do like a serious podcast about mental health. And she was like, we'll just talk about that.
Yeah, that's why you're perfect for it.
Yeah, I was like, I don't talk about stuff like that, you know?
Well, I think people, you know, anybody that's followed you for any amount of time and has listened to your podcast, or, you know, you're everywhere, you get at least a sense of who you are as a person. And I think it means even more when someone like you, who isn't necessarily talking about his feelings every 5 minutes, finally does take a minute and maybe, you know, it's like you on the Weigh-In Show last time. I thought you and Bobby had a really good moment there talking about the mental health aspect of things in the context of Alex Volkanovsky. But yeah, it's super important, probably more important to hear it from guys like you than, you know, a whiny bitch like me.
Well, I was going to say, they want to hear it more from you, Laura. No. Right? They probably want to hear it more from Rebecca than me, even with her fucking caterpillar eyebrows. I'm going to have a serious word with her. Laura, I cannot thank you enough. I'm sure I speak on behalf of all the believers in the comment section right now saying she's great. Can we just have this be Believe You Me with Laura Sanko and Anthony Smith? Okay, and you never know, you little bastards.
I mean, I love Anthony. Why not? Let's just make it a trio.
My mental health is going down right now. Sorry, I shouldn't joke about such things. Laura, you're the best. Wherever you are in the world, thank you for watching, subscribing, ring the bell. We'll see you soon.